right, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Dumbleline Minutes. I'm Sam Lau here with Eric Dull.
Hey, hey, hey.
All right, everyone. It's July 19th, 10 a.m. Pacific time. And recording our special hours during the summer here. Relatively quiet week from the news front, unless you're impacted by this CrowdStrike debacle and otherwise in IT. Outside of that, it feels like the markets are running along pretty smoothly, although I'm seeing a lot of red across the board. So with that, let's jump into the markets here. Looking at the S&P 500 on a week-to-date basis, through the time of this recording, we're looking at a negative 1.8% on the broader index. It's still up 16.5% year-to-date. Pretty mixed bag in terms of the sector performance. The energy sector leading the way here at a positive 2.5% on the week-to-date basis. The other bookend there is led down by technology. Once again, technology down 5.25% on a week-to-date basis. Utilities, I believe that was a positive performer last week, one of the top two. Is other way around, bro, this week at negative 2% right now, alongside discretionary, which is also down about 2%. But with that, taking a look, we got a continuation of last week's trend where we have a little bit of reversal between the year-to-date, the prior to this, the year-to-date best performers underperforming the previously worst performers. So with that, the Russell 1000 is down 1.75% this week. Russell 2000 up 2%. Similar type theme with growth versus value, with the Russell 1000 growth down almost 4% on the week-to-date basis, with the value up 0.75 point. It looks like week-to-date thus far. Moving over to fixed income, a little bit of red across the board here as well. Starting out with the Treasury curve, with the 2-year note with the, currently with a yield of 4.5, let's call it. That's 6 basis points higher in yield versus the previous week. And then 4.25 on the 10-year note, 5 basis points higher there on that yield. And for the bond, we're at 4.45, also about 5 basis points higher on the week so far for the yield. What that meant for the broader aggregate, the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate, that's down 40 basis points right now. It's trying to hold on to this positive print for the year to date. That's still positive 60 basis points right now. And as I speak here, it looks like bank loans, the sole positive cohort within the fixed income sectors that we look at here at Dumbleline Minutes. For this episode here, bank loans is up 10 basis points. Everything else in the red. We did have a little bit of movement here in the high yield index, with the high yield now negative 10 basis points. But earlier in the day, this morning, it was did have a decent positive sign in front of 10 basis points for that week to date. So it's flipped it and done a little bit of a reversal there. Looking at the worst performer for this fixed income cohort, it's going to be EM sovereign debt. That's down over 1%, followed by IG corporate credit. That's down 0.75%. And then agency mortgage-backed securities down 40 basis points, and treasuries down 0.25 point for completeness here. Moving over to the commodity market, commodities are down big this week. They're down 3% on the week-to-date basis. That pretty much brings the entire month-to-date negative with this week's move. That index is also down just a little bit over 3% for the month-to-date, hanging on to this positive number of 2% for the year-to-date. However, when we look at the underlying some of the underlying commodity contracts, we've got a pretty big move now in WTI crude oil. It was about $2 higher when I was looking at just about an hour or so ago, but now it's struggling to hold on to this $80 handle in WTI front month futures. It's at 80.69 for one barrel of WTI front month futures there. It's down just under 2% on the week-to-date basis. For the year-to-date, it's still up 13%. moving over to gold, which has seen a bit of a rally. It hit all-time highs again earlier this week, but right now it's struggling to hold on to this 2,400 a troy ounce price on the front month contract for the gold futures there. Right now it's at $2,402 per troy ounce. That's down about 80 basis points for the week, still holding on to a 16% positive return on the year. But with that, Eric, I'm going to pass it over to you to talk about what happened in macro land this week.
All right. Well, the pretty quick week. So hopefully we can get through this and give you guys back some of your Friday afternoon. Tuesday, we got retail sales, the advanced month over month print for June, and it came in flat, which was a big beat versus the estimate. The forecasters had this index being down 0.3%, and it came in flat, which was a pretty positive thing. If you look at retail sales ex auto and gas, it came in at positive 0.8% month over month, which was a beat of 0.6%. So I think that was a pretty healthy report. If you were a economic bear, this definitely doesn't feed that narrative, and it kind of says that people are still consuming, maybe a little bit less. I mean, it's still flat on the headline, so you can't say people are consuming like gangbusters, but definitely a beat versus expectations. Some of the sentiment had been shifting. Digging into it a little bit, I thought it was pretty interesting that when you look at the, like, underneath the hood there, you had non-store retailers up, building materials up, general merchandise up, you know, health stores up, eating and drinking up. And the two biggest negative contributions were gasoline stations and vehicles and parts. And, you know, it kind of makes sense from an kind of anecdotal standpoint. People might be spending a little less on new vehicles and parts right now if you can afford to put it off. You know, if your balance sheet is a little stretched at home, as we've been kind of reporting on, the consumer maybe is eating into some of their savings. And so, but people are still living, you know, they still have jobs and they're still living their lives. So that's kind of my two cents on it. Kind of looking at things from the retail sales control group, we also had a big positive beat. The forecasters had the estimate at 0.2% and the print came in at 0.9%. So that was some positive economic news. We also got import prices on Tuesday, and import prices once again came in a little higher than the estimate. The estimate was for a decline of 0.2% month over month, and they came in flat at zero. That leaves the year over year at positive 1.6%, which was above the estimate of 1 and above the prior of 1.4. Now, you know, if you look at, you kind of look at that, it's still not at a high level, and it's still very, very much inside the Fed's inflation target. They don't target import prices, but we like to look at import prices because it's a less manipulated number. And so the price of goods coming in the United States, 1.6% year over year. So I would say from an inflation standpoint, that's a pretty stable number. Wednesday, we got industrial production, and that came in at 0.6%, a little over the estimate, but probably positive, but still pretty low, low number, but positive surprise there. And capacity utilization also increased by 0.4% to 78.8. So I think all three of these kind of things we've just discussed have been positive from an economic growth perspective. The economic engine is humming along. Wednesday, we also got the Beige Book, which is the Federal Reserve's Beige Book. And I don't want to go into the weeds here too much, but I think the big takeaway from my point of view is they said that on balance, employment rose at a slight pace, and most districts reported employment was flat or up slightly, with a few districts reporting modest employment growth. And from my point of view, that's kind of the The Fed's really been watching the employment market, and they want to see supply and demand in the labor market get in balance so that they can feel confident that the inflation dragon isn't going to roar back. And that's been really one of the key focuses of the Federal Reserve. And I think that that's what I took away from their beige book. And they perceive the labor market to be coming into equilibrium. Now, whether that's the truth or not, I don't know. And there's a lot of things we look at to try and understand that. But their perception is it's coming into balance, which puts potential rate cuts on the table if inflation remains contained. And to wrap up the week, on Thursday, we got initial jobless claims came in at 243,000. You know, this is a little elevated versus maybe the averages we've been looking at. It's not a shocking print, but a little elevated. So, and I feel like things have been a little elevated. The 4-week moving average is at 235, you know, and that's up from, you know, months ago it was in the 200 area. So it's up a little bit, maybe 5 to 10% on average, but not a dire scenario by any means. And continuing claims came in at 1,867,000. A little bit above the estimate, but right in line with the prior, within 20,000. And the last thing we get is the leading economic index, which I like to call the broken clock indicator, because it's another negative month over month print suggesting we should have been in a recession or we're in a recession, and no recession, at least not one declared by Enver. So since January 2022, we've seen 28 out of 30 months negative. And, you know, it's just one of those things where it's tough to, you know, it's tough to really put a lot of credibility in this index when it's just been pretty much dead wrong, from my point of view, at least. So that kind of wraps us up for the week.
Yeah, it feels like the conference board, who's responsible for compiling this leading economic index data here, is feeling a little bit of the heat too in terms of the signal that they provide, especially on the year-over-year component, where historically it's been quite accurate in terms of providing a signal for economic contraction and, you know, subsequently it be declared as a recession by the National Bureau of Economic Research. But it doesn't seem, at least at this point, to be providing that type of signal in terms of whether or not we are in a recession. Now, you know, we know that the NBER, the National Bureau of Economic Research, declare a recession, you know, months or sometimes quarters after the fact that they ever that from when they happen. And, you know, back in 2022, just after the onset of the Federal Reserve rate hikes, we did have two quarter over quarter negative GDP prints. So, you know, who knows over that period of time, even though we don't subscribe to the idea that two quarter over quarter GDP, negative GDP prints necessarily means a recession, perhaps, you know, others do. And we'll see if the NBER comes back and says that we actually were in a recession. On the flip side, I know, you know, in talking to Mark Kimbrough, I think he's been tracking some of these numbers here for the LDI and hard coding them into his spreadsheet, because, you know, we're always talking about here how things can get revised away as data comes through. So he wants to keep kind of a firsthand account of what the LDI is pushing out and see how that changes over time as we move, you know, over the next few years, to see how if LDI comes out and revises and scrubs away some of this perhaps miscue that they might have presented for this round of the economic cycle. But I guess stay tuned. It could be a while, but Mark Kimbrough's, again, kind of tracking this stuff. So with that, we did have a host of Fed speak this week in advance of the month-end FOMC meeting. So we are entering into a Fed blackout period. So with that, we had a number of talking heads come out from the Federal Reserve. But as always, I always feel like the most important one is Jerome Powell. So he did have an interview conducted at an economic forum earlier this week and Monday. And it's kind of interesting because he talks about the dual mandate here, as you alluded to there with Eric, in terms of what you saw in the beige book. And things coming into balance. But it is important to note that Powell did make these comments prior on Monday. So that's prior to the import prices. I'm not sure how much emphasis he gives for the import prices as a measure of inflation, but he did make these comments prior to the release of the import prices on Tuesday. We'll see if he actually makes note of the these price indices when he actually comes out and talks in about 1.5 weeks time here. But what he did say on Monday was that most members at the Federal Reserve have come into greater confidence that inflation is heading down towards the 2% goal, a little bit of a different tone than what we saw after the first quarter. But he was talking about, given what we've seen in the second quarter, it's possibly paving the way for a near-term interest rate cut. However, he was a little bit coy and did not indicate any specific messaging about the timing of said rate reductions. Right now, when I take a look at the WIRP in terms of what the Fed funds futures markets are projecting, is that we do right now, as for the September 18th, 2024 meeting, and just pretty much looking across relative to the other meetings, it doesn't look like much has changed right now in the markets versus last Friday, but it stands the same right now at the September 18th meeting, pricing in the first full cut of 25 basis points, and then the second cut coming in fully priced in December 18th meeting, so 3 months after the September, and then the third full cut coming in January 29, 2025 meeting. So that's what the market expectation is, despite Powell not giving any clear indication on the messaging of the timing there. He did say that they didn't have any additional confidence after the first quarter readings of CPI and PCE, but given the three readings that they now have for the second quarter of 2024, they do somewhat add to the confidence of getting back to that 2% goal. Also, in terms of the dual mandate, he did talk about the labor market and started to emphasize that the tone has been shifting within the FOMC around the potential risk to the overall labor market in terms of what that's the impact that the restrictive rates have been having there. So the quote there is that now that inflation has come down and the labor market has indeed cooled off, we're going to be looking at both mandates, end quote there. I'll extend that quote and say that he says that they are in much better balance, and a unexpected weakening in the labor force could be also be a reason for the Fed to react sooner than expected. So right now, they indeed are looking at both of those signs, which is also pretty interesting because, again, you know, we've talked about this a number of times in the minutes, where when you get that first print of the payrolls data, it's, you know, it's been beating a lot to the upside, coming in higher than expected. And the market seems to react based on that and then fade the concurrent news that comes out at the same time that talks about the previous months and talking about the downward revisions in the numbers. So fading that revised data in favor of the data that comes in for that current month that tends to come in above expectations. So it does seem like right now, based on this messaging from Powell, that at least the FOMC is kind of looking through the initial prints and definitely paying attention to some of these downward revisions and the weakness in the labor market that they're citing there. So only about 1.5 weeks left to figure out what the Fed is currently thinking on that July 31st meeting. So we'll wait for them. In terms of things to keep an eye on next week, we do have a couple important data prints coming up. But starting on Wednesday, we do get the PMI data for both the manufacturing as well as the services component for the S&P Global. Both of those are expected to remain in expansionary territory above the 50 mark there. On Thursday, July 25th, we'll also get the advanced look, the first estimate for the second quarter of 2024 GDP number. And right now, that's looking to have an estimate of an annualized 1.9% versus the previous quarter of the first quarter of 2024 at a positive 1.4%. So it's about 50 basis points higher, creeping up on the estimate for the second quarter here for the U.S. economy. And then also on Thursday, we'll get the durable goods order and capital goods order. Both of those are both expected to be more positive in terms of the orders there versus the previous month. So these are for the month of June. Looking at the headline number for durable goods, that's expected to expand to 0.5%. Ex-transportation, that basket is expected to come in at 0.2% positive, and then cap goods is expected to come in positive 0.1%. And then finally on Friday, I think is the data that a lot of people will be keeping an eye on in terms of the market. We get the PCE data coming in. So with it, we'll have the headline PCE month over month expected to come in a little bit hotter at a positive 0.1%. Year over year basis point is expected to slow a little bit from 2.6 in May to an estimated 2.5% for the month of June. For the core component of core PCE there, it looks like the month over month is expected to come in a little bit higher at 0.2%, and the year over year component is expected to be flat at 2.6. And then to kind of just round out what we're talking about and what we saw in terms of the retail sales numbers this week as an indication of consumer willingness to spend, I won't necessarily say consumer health, but the U.S. consumer's willingness to buy things, we will have the personal spending numbers coming in as well as the personal income coming in. So with the personal spending, it's expected to increase from a 0.2% to a 0.3% on a month-over-month basis for the month of June. And then personal income is expected to decline by 10 basis points to come in at 0.4%. So with that wrap of things to keep an eye on, that wraps up this episode for Double Line Minutes for the period ending July 19th. So I wanted to thank everyone for tuning in today.
Thanks to all our listeners out there today on DL Minutes. Hit us up on X at DL Minutes or send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com with any questions, comments, or suggestions.
Yeah, and don't forget, you can check us out on YouTube. We're going to be posting up a new video. I'm told it might even have come up while we're recording this Minutes episode, but here we'll have our deputy CIO, Jeff Sherman, talk about growth, inflation, and credit cross currents. Basically, just giving his thoughts on the macro market thus far through the first half of 2024. Basically, just looking at the three primary factors that he sees driving the macroeconomic activity as well as financial markets, and that would be a breakdown of the slowing pace of growth, signs of progress on inflation, and then credit cycle cross currents. There, again, you can find that by searching for Double Line at our YouTube channel. And then also don't forget that we have a Between the Lines blog on our LinkedIn page as well for Double Line from our macro asset allocation team. They have weekly updates on Friday for their blog, and I don't see it up yet for the current Friday, but the last period was talking about some of the trend change that we've been seeing in one of the primary drivers underlying US CPI basket, and that's the owner's equivalent rent of residences there. So it's a quick little read for those who are interested in finding out further thoughts that the Double Line team is bringing out to the table. So wanted to thank everyone again for listening out there and hope everyone has a great weekend.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of Double Line Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents Double Line's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of Double Line. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from Double Line, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither Double Line nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. Double Line is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any Double Line entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any Double Line entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2024, Double Line Capital.